This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the September 19th edition of Invest Talk, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. Now, we try to answer your questions live during this hour, 4 to 5 Pacific time, every day, Monday through Friday. Or you can leave your question on our 24-hour listener line. It's the same number, live and after hours, 888-99-CHART. And we'll get to the questions here in a minute. It's basically buying a security within one market and simultaneously, at the exact same time, selling it in another market. That's profiting from a temporary difference in price. That's arbitrage. Arbitrage. Is it riskless? Is it riskless profit? And that's going to be our main talking point today. Arbitrage. What is it? How does it work? So before we go any further, though, let's go ahead and take a call on our 24-hour listen line. It's open to your questions anytime you want to ask them.
Hey, Steve or Justin. It's Michael calling from Tampa, Florida. I recently, over the weekend, I'm 22 years old, I opened a Roth IRA. And I contributed the maximum amount this year. I was wondering, since I'm 22 and I have quite a few years until I'm 60, investing in something for a very long time where I can sit it and forget it, I was thinking ETFs like SPY or QQQ, you know, something very mild, not too volatile, and sit on it for 40 or 30 years. I was just wondering, what do you think about doing that? Of course, not doing too much now because it's high. You know, just a small amount now, waiting for a pullback. My second question is, I start school in January, and I was wondering, since I'm going to be quitting my job in December next year, since I'm going to be a student, I won't be able to contribute again $5,500 to my Roth. So I was thinking, would it be wise, if possible, if I work enough to where I've made $5,500, let's say February or March, and then quit? So I'm exactly the number where I can contribute the maximum amount to my Roth. I understand you need to be working to fulfill that requirement. So I was thinking I should work just enough where I've made that much and then quit to focus on school. If you could just let me know, what are your thoughts? I'd really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Well, the answer to the second part is, yeah, that would be great. I mean, if you could work, if you could while you're going to school, go ahead and contribute whatever you make, the $5,500, and then you have $11,000 in there. And the answer to your first question is, yeah, buy the SPY, the S&P 500. That's the good long-term 80% of the market cap stocks, okay, and there's 500 of them. But there's one little thing you said that I want to make sure you understand, that you said that the less volatile, safer index. Okay, well, it can be pretty volatile. Don't think it, we've just haven't seen it in a long time since 2008. But try to remember in the bear market in 2008 to the March 9th of 2009, the market went down about 45%, the S&P 500, 45%. Now, it made it all up in the following year, but I do want you to realize that it can be volatile. But over the length of time you're talking about, you're right. Just ignore it, put the money in, and it'd be great if you could buy it on a discount. But even if you bought it today, after all that time, you'd still be way ahead of the game. So that those both are very good ideas. Appreciate the call. Okay, I appreciate it. When you're invested, you must be attuned to what's happening in the global economy, all the gyrations going on over everywhere. Now, you know that I've mentioned that Europe has been recovering and Japan's been recovering. They're finally getting some positive traction on GDP and looks like it's improving just as we are improving, but they're at a much lower level than us, even though we didn't do very good the first quarter, but we are improving. So the markets also fluctuate with all that economic gyrations. It just happens. That's the way it's supposed to happen. Therefore, you've got to study and attempt to understand economic activity and try to look forward to the future economic activity around the world. You can watch things like the leading economic indicators, GDP reports, gross domestic product. But With the advent of index ETFs that follow all types of asset classes, it's easier to read the tea leaves than ever. You got currencies. You can look, watch the American currencies. You know, the dollar, U.S. dollar. I like to look at UUP. That's the American dollar, and how it. There's all kinds of things you can look at: junk bonds and regular through ETFs, the indexes. You can study them. There's an ETF that tracks the performance of 30 years of the U.S. Treasury market, so you know what's going on there. The advent of ETFs is making your job easier and harder at the same time. Why? Because now there's so many choices for you. And so, but it does help understand what's going on using ETFs, looking at the various indexes of every type of asset class. So understanding the complexities of the market and underlying economy can be overwhelming, but the more you pay attention, take notes, develop a strategy, the sooner you'll be able to make decisions based on fact instead of, you know, with feelings or emotions. Now, of course, obtain this kind of level of understanding will be difficult, time-consuming, but it will reflect in the growth of your portfolio. Now, what can I do to help you today? Back to the phones. Another question, 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHART. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's go to Wendy first. Hi, Wendy.
Hi. I'm doing good. How are you, Steve?
I'm good. Thank you for the call.
Thank you. I have a question regarding ROIC.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a rate, but I think I have too much in my portfolio, so I want to find a point to sell it. And can you use the technical thing to now see if it's will have a uptrend thing?
Now, is this the retail opportunity REIT?
Yes.
Okay, ROIC.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Retail opportunity investment.
Okay. Okay, it's a REIT, everybody, Real Estate Investment Trust, that acquires, owns, leases, and manages portfolios of necessity-based retail properties in the U.S. and West Coast. Now, a REIT, just a reminder, everybody, REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust, is a equity that invests in real estate in some way, and as a REIT, it pays 90% of its earnings out to you, the shareholder, in the form of a dividend every year. And if it does that, it doesn't have to pay corporate income tax. So that's the benefit. Now, this is a REIT. It's a $2.1 billion REIT. Earnings have been steadily going up the last 3 or 4 years. Going to make $1.13 this year. Going to make $1.21 next year. Made $1.07 last the year before. 97 cents before. So it's been consistently moving up. At $1.21, the stock is selling at $19 a share. So that's close to what? 18, 17, PE, 18, 17? And that year, range is 13 to 22. So it's kind of in the middle. Pays a 3.9% dividend. And I would say that, you know, I kind of think, well, let me move this over here. Okay, that return on equity is kind of low at 3%, mm-hmm. And I like it in the teens, but REITs usually are a little bit low. It doesn't have a lot of debt, which is good, but that retail sector is tough in the environment that we're in. So it's a question,
right.
Is it time to get in it because it's already been beaten up enough? And my instincts tell me not to get into these things yet. I don't think they've been punished enough. So that's what I think about that, Wendy. So do you already own it?
Yeah, I want to find a selling point.
Okay.
Where I can get out.
Okay. Well, I'd probably go ahead and get out ASAP. Okay. I'd probably go up because it just broke 2 days ago. All the moving averages on the downside. So it's time to. You know, it's time to exit. Yeah, it's time to exit this stock. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Wendy. I appreciate it. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. I welcome your questions, but first I have a question for you. Do you know how much money you save or spend each year? What is your current net worth? Do you know what that is? Are you borrowing money in the most efficient way? Are you using credit cards? Not everybody knows the answers. How about you? 888-99-CHART is how you get through right now on Invest Talk. Arbitrage, riskless profit, do you think? What is arbitrage? That's going to be one of our talking points today. Also, the Fed's balance sheet is set to unwind. Will that be a moment of truth for the financial markets? I think it's very interesting what's going on, and we're going to talk about it a little bit. And will the rest of the states go the way of Puerto Rico? Now, Puerto Rico is a commonwealth, but it, you know, it does very much, it, you know, it uses our currency. It's on, people live in Puerto Rico are subject to our Social Security, our tax system, all those things. In Puerto Rico, everybody, in case you don't know, went bankrupt. And talking about bankruptcy, I want to talk about Toys R Us. It's not all about Amazon, you know. No, not necessarily. So we're going to talk about those things. Unless you have something else you want to discuss, and I'll be happy to do that. The market was up, Dow up 41, the NASDAQ up 7, and the S&P up 3. But what is very interesting, you had 182 stocks down on volume, lots of volume. This is all about volume. 182 stocks down on volume and 64 stocks up on volume. It's been that way for some time. Have you noticed? Now, what does that mean? Well, it just means that a lot of stocks are moving down. So I don't think you should feel, if you have a portfolio of stocks, you're not an index, you might not be doing as well as you think you should be. Well, that's because the market is fairly narrow, meaning the bulk of the stocks are moving down, not up. Big cap stocks, certain ones are moving up that drive the market. I mean, It depends on what you're in. It's pretty much a stock picker's market. So it's going to be difficult for a lot of us to outperform the indexes. And I mentioned before, you do realize indexes are not static. They do change them. I mean, they take out the weakest ones and put stronger stocks in the indexes all the time. Every year they get revised some way, somewhere. The S&P 500, and the only one that doesn't every year is the Dow. Even though it was recently, one was taken out, one was put in. Remember, the Dow is only 30 stocks. Let's go to Robert in Pleasanton. How you doing, Robert?
Hey, pretty good, Steve. How about you?
Good. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Hey, so I've been keeping an eye on the stock of Seagate, STX.
Yes.
And it seems to just keep falling. It's getting very close to the 52-week low. It also pays a very healthy dividend. Just wondering your opinion about this stock.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about Seagate and someone thinking about buying them, or a strategic agreement with a big company. I'm trying to remember, and I read that not too long ago. Actually, I think Seagate is at a pretty good bargain right now. I think it's low, everybody. It's got down to about $30.50. It's at $32.18. And just in July, it was at, you know, $38. A year ago, it was at $48. So, yeah. You know, but I think, Robert, the damage is already in. Frankly, I think the damage. You could buy this stock now, and if it breaks below $30.50, new low, I'd get out. That means it's about an 8% fall. But I think at the higher probability, it may be many of its problems are behind it. That's what I think. It's a high risk play. High risk, though. High risk, okay? Just remember, it's high risk. This is Invest Talk, everybody. Give me a call. 888-992-4278. Let's talk to Shuri in Redwood City. How you doing?
Hi, Steve. Doing good. How are you?
Good. Thank you for the call. I do appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks. I just had a question on a stock. The company name is SunPower, SPWR.
Okay.
I wanted to know your advice on that. I bought it when it was doing really well, like around 30s or something, but now I guess the value has dropped.
Yeah.
So I just want to know if it's a good time to sell that or hold on to it.
Okay, this is SunPower Corporation, everybody, a $1.1 billion company, so a small cap company, manufactures high-performance solar electric power technologies using proprietary processes. It does make money, but it's lost money this year and last year. Going to make money next year. Made $2.17 in 2015. Next year, it's only going to make 6 cents. So it's had some real problems with its profits, and that's because the sales are so erratic. I mean, sales were down 20% in the most recent quarter, but 2 quarters ago, they were up 174%. Very erratic in their sales. And I think one of the things that's putting a lot of pressure on them is they have a lot of debt. So you got some problems with the company. Financially, it has some problems. And it's not really worth very much. I'll tell you what. If it stays above $8, which is about the 200-day moving average, if it stays above that, you can hold on to it. If it breaks below that, give up and just move on to a different stock. Okay?
Okay.
That way you have a rule, and then you don't. It's not emotional. There's a rule. Broke below the 200-day moving average, you know, and that's the long-term moving average. And the stocks above it are bullish. The stocks below it are bearish. But this one's been falling for several months now, and you don't want to hang on to it if it keeps falling.
Okay. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your help.
Thank you, Shuri. And that's a good reason. When you buy a stock, give yourself some rules. Write some rules down. I'm going to hold this. I bought this stock because of this, 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 and this. And it should go up because of these reasons. If it goes down, because you never know, I will sell it at this price because of this reason. Okay? Or these reasons. You know, give yourself some rules so you know you're not reacting emotionally. And that's really what you're trying to do. Avoid emotional decisions as much as you can. So what is arbitrage? And I mentioned at the top of the show, and Investopedia defines it very nicely. And arbitrage is basically buying a security in one market and simultaneously selling it in another market at a higher price, profiting from a temporary differences in profits and prices. And this is considered riskless profit for the investor, really. So I'll give you an example. Let's say TD Bank trades on the Toronto Stock Exchange in Canada, symbol TSX, and is trading for Canadian dollars 63.50. Okay, and it's also traded and listed on our exchange here in the U.S. and is trading at U.S. dollars at $47. Sure. So Canadian dollar $63.50. Well, if you take into consideration the exchange rate, which is $1.35 for every dollar Canadian, U.S. dollar, $1.37 for every U.S. dollar, then it's really trading at $64.39 instead of $63.50. So you have a difference in prices in two different markets. So you buy it in one market, sell it in the other, and you just made the money. You made a dollar, a little less than a dollar on this. That's called arbitrage. Okay? Now, you and I probably can't do it. Don't think you can do it. Why? You don't even consider trying it because it's really for the big boys. However, there might be an ETF. I'm looking to see if there's an ETF right real quick. I don't see one. But if they come out with an arbitrage ETF, and they probably have one out there somewhere, it might be a good idea to at least study it and see how it works. That'd be interesting, would it not? So that's arbitrage. Arbitrage. So now, remember, it's just all it simply is a mispricing in two different markets for the exact same equity. Just different mispricing. They're not priced at the exact same rate. And there could be various reasons for this, by the way. But it's not for you and me. It's a little bit more difficult than that. Okay, excuse me. I'm going to talk about the Fed's balance sheet here in a minute. Remember, the Fed balance sheet is what, $4 trillion? And almost all of that is bonds, and majority of that is government bonds. And the Fed is meeting this week. This week. So what do you think is going to happen there? You've heard Justin and I talk about transitioning from growth investing to value investing. Do you know why? Well, let's talk about that. You can reach me right now as we move into part two of today's program, 888-99-CHART.
We continue with our podcast. First, a word from KPP Financial. When you make money choices, you try to be objective, of course. Look for the facts. Look at your life situation. Some people choose to work with a registered investment advisor, and one of the most important reasons is to be defensive, keeping risk at a minimum. It's not only a way to share the worry, it becomes a practical matter. A professional advisor has the resources and experience. They study the market. They try to anticipate what might happen. For more than 20 years, KPP Financial has been serving clients all across America. They're accessible, responsive, and maybe most important, the KPP principals invest right along with their clients. They call it parallel investing. And to find out more about that or any of their investment programs, just go to investtalk.com when you're ready and click on the Investing tab. And now we continue with the podcast. Get back to Invest Talk, and it's all about your money. Steve is here to share some ideas, bring you up to date on market trends, and answer your questions. Our direct line, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART. Love to talk to you. We're going to go talk to Anand in San Jose. How you doing, Anand?
Hi.
Hello. Did we lose him?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, there you are. How you doing?
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question about a specific stock. The ticker symbol is MRVL,
yes.
Marvell Semiconductors. So I bought the stock when the company was under distress and a lot of had a decent gain on it. The question now I have is, this company seems to be a candidate for a sell-off or an acquisition
right.
in the next 1 to 2 year term. Right. So the question is, should I hold it or... What do you think is
you don't want to hold or sell something because you think it might be bought or sold, because that's a pure guess, and it might be a good guess, but it's still a guess. So let's look at the fundamentals. You always want to hold or buy something or sell something based on what the fundamentals look like, and the fundamentals look pretty good. They've turned themselves around. They made 43 cents a share in 2016, then 2017, 65 cents a share. They're estimated to make $1.12 this year and $1.25 next year, and it's an $18 stock. So we're looking at a stock that's what, 13 PE? And the average PE is 8 to 33, so it's on the low end. A little light on the return on equity. Sales have finally turned around. It's a $9 billion company, and someone could pick this up very easily. It's Marvell Technology, everybody, MRVL. Designs analog, digital, mixed signals, and microprocessors for storage, telecommunications, consumer markets. And I probably, Anand, hold it simply because I think the fundamentals have turned, and the stock is now starting to move up. I think you hold on to it. Now, if the market corrects, I'll probably pull it down. But for the fundamentals look better, and they've turned themselves around. And if they happen to be bought out, they're going to be bought out more than $18 a share for what it's selling out for now. So, but the fundamentals tell me I probably wouldn't sell it here. I would not. I'd probably hold on to it. Okay?
Steve, what do you think is a good target price for this based on fundamentals?
I would say about $20, not that much further from where it is, okay? But it depends on how well they turn themselves around. We don't know that story yet, so that's a tough question. But I think it's probably worth more than $25 on a buyout, okay?
Right.
Thanks, Anand. Thanks. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Let's go to Raghu in Fremont. How you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you for taking my call, Steve.
Thank you.
I have a question on Cypress Semiconductor.
Uh-huh.
What do you think about it?
CY, Cypress Semiconductor. It is a $4.8 billion company. Manufactures programmable systems on a chip. Touch screens, controllers, and different things, okay? The company looks pretty darn solid. It's growing its sales. Be $1.13 next year per share, and it's a $14 stock. So it's only selling, what, at a 13 PE or so? And that's right at its low range of 12.37. So I like that. Sales are growing very strong. Let me take a look at the chart over here. See why I didn't punch that in. It's going to have a lot of resistance right around 15. It's been coming off of about $13 and moved on up to 14.69. And it's a lot of resistance here. Do you own it already, Raghu?
Yeah, I own it, and I was thinking whether to take profits or should I just...
I'll tell you what, it's a tough question because it's coming right up against, on a chart, resistance right at $15 a share. If it breaks through, man, you want to hold on to this stock because it's going higher. I don't know where, how much higher, but it's going higher. It has been high as 23 in the last 5 years or so. So... if it can't break through, it's moving up pretty sharply here in the last couple of weeks. So something's pushing it up. It could be earnings. I don't know. I'd have to do a little bit more research. But the sales are accelerating. So I kind of think you should hold on to it and see if it breaks through that 15, that resistance level. Don't be surprised if it hesitates in this area, though, about $15, $14, $15. But as long as it holds up, I would... try to give it some time to break through. Unless you doubled your money and maybe take half or sell half, that might be a good idea. It depends on how much profits you got in it and how many shares you have. It never hurts to take profits off the table, but I kind of think you might want to hold on to it to see if it can break through that $15 area. Okay? Appreciate the call. That was CY, Cypress Semiconductor. Notice getting a lot of calls on tech stocks here. I'm not sure why. Okay, Janet, the Federal Reserve is meeting this week, and they're talking about, and they've already hinted at it, reducing their, what, $4.5 trillion balance sheet? Well, what is that? That means they have been buying. Remember the QE. We all remember the QE. QE was massive, flooding the market with money by the Fed lowering interest rates down to zero, buying bonds so that all this money was in the hands of banks and institutions and insurance companies that they had to do something with. And all that was to try to drive the economy, for them to spend it somehow. Build factories, do something. Okay? And a lot of that money came into the market and drove stock prices. Now, this is the theory. Do you believe that that's what happened? Do you believe that the stock market has been driven a lot by the Federal Reserve having such loose money policy? That's a question I'm asking you. Because if that's the case, and the market has gone up very nicely, very strong for quite some time because of the loose money policies, if you believe that, then why don't you believe the opposite is going to be true when they're now talking about, they are raising the rates back up, and they're now talking about selling off those bonds? Why wouldn't the liquidity coming out of the system drive stock prices down? Now, I'm not saying it is, because we've never had this happen before. No one really knows. I don't know. No one really knows. No one knew what would happen if they pumped all this money like they did. They suspected that it should have, you know, caused a lot of growth, but it hadn't caused that much growth. Yeah. For the unprecedented down to zero interest rates for such a long time, it didn't cause that much growth, did it? But it did cause the stock market to rise pretty sharply over those same years. And you do realize that your EU, the ECB, European Central Bank, and Japan are both pumping a bunch of money into their markets still. They're still on the QE bandwagon. What happens when they stop? Because now their economies are starting to pick up. That's a question I'm asking. I wished I had the answer. I don't have the answer because we've never had this happen before. If I try to use logic And the logic is that, well, if we spend, if we flooded the market economy with all this money, if you take it out, shouldn't that slow it down? The logic seems there, but it does not necessarily have to follow. It doesn't, because maybe they flooded all this money in, and they got, it's just like kickstarting the economy, and now as they take the, you don't have to keep trying to start the engine when it's already running. So the theory is maybe it'll already run, and it's okay to take the liquidity out. But do you think that's the case? I'm not. Guess what? We're going to find out over the next couple of years. This is a broad look at everything. This is not like what's going to happen next week and next month or even by the end of the year. I'm talking about a broader look at the overall direction. We've had a major change in direction from loose money to tighter money. Europe and Japan haven't, but we have. And the Fed meeting this week is going to tell us if they're going to, you know, if we're going to find out if they are going to start cutting back on their balance sheet, or are they just going to continue to watch it and talk about it. They're really trying to prepare us, try to manage our expectations. That's what they're trying to do. And they've done a pretty good job at it, I must admit. Each month I schedule one-hour meetings with our listeners to answer important questions about their retirement portfolio. How much cash on hand do you have? Do you have exposure internationally? Are you over-diversified, under-diversified? Is your broker providing you with what you need to succeed? Are you cutting losses and letting winners run? I'll be in San Jose on September 27th. That's next Wednesday. If you're not near our California offices, I can still meet you via Skype or telephone. It's easy. If you'd like to set up a time, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then Portfolio Review.
How would you like to invest in the same program as your financial advisor? You can when you choose any one of the investment programs at KPP Financial. The principals at KPP invest their own money right along with their clients. It's called Parallel Investing. KPP Financial. Independent thinking. Shared success.
Hey guys, got a question about diversification. This is Kurt in Maryland, by the way. They always say, you know, one of the ways to do it is to buy foreign stocks, but do foreign stocks always move independently of the U.S. market? I mean, what happened in 2008 when, you know, the market drops, the U.S. market, do the foreign stocks totally move independently, or they go down to some degree also? I'll listen for your podcast. Thanks.
In 2008, the foreign stocks moved down just like ours did because it was a financial, worldwide financial crisis crunch, not just a U.S. It started here. And the market, our markets moved up way before the Euro market. The European market just started to move up now. So it's not always separate and distinct movement. Sometimes it's tied, sometimes it's not. But that's diversification. If you want to diversify away from our market, you don't really necessarily do it with foreign markets. You might do it with other kinds of assets like precious metals or like commodities or currencies, you know, something other than stocks. That would be, that's a different kind of diversification, and it's not a bad idea. So yeah, I will say this. Generally, European markets move with ours because their economy generally moves with ours. We are kind of the dog. They are kind of the tail. I hate, you know, not to try to insult them. But if the dog's going one direction, the tail goes with us. But sometimes the tail gets whipped around by itself. The dog hasn't moved at all. So you just can't tell. But it is a good form of diversification. Good question. Appreciate that. Let's go to Samuel in Santa Clara. How you doing, Samuel? We want to talk about Macy's.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Steve. I have a question on Macy's. It's paying a very rich dividend, and I was wondering whether I should sell it or hold it.
Well, I don't think it's. I don't think it can continue to pay 6.9% dividend. That's going to be tough. They're going to make $2.64 next year, make $3.38 this year. And They made 312 last year, 377 the year before, 425 the year before. So you can see they're having a heck of a time. Sales are falling in the single digits every quarter, like 5% or so. And this is Macy's, everybody, operates 829 department stores. Department stores, Samuel, are just going to have a heck of a time because, you know, they're competing with Amazon, and everybody goes in the store, look around, and then go out and buy the same thing on Amazon for cheaper. And so they're trying to compete with that. And it's getting very difficult, and they're closing a number of stores. I would sell it and move on to something different. I just don't think it's got a great future at this point. Even though it's a low-priced stock, I think it's a value trap. Okay, Samuel?
Thank you much for your comments.
Thank you for the call. I do appreciate that. Okay, let's go to Jay in Fremont. How you doing, Jay?
I'm fine. Thank you, Steve. How are you?
Good. Thank you for the call.
Steve, I want to know if NVIDIA is a good buy at this price.
Okay, NVIDIA Corporation, NVDA, designs graphic processor units used in personal computers, workstations, game consoles. It's a $112 billion company. Okay, so it's a mega cap company. Is it a good buy at today at $187? And I'm going to say no, it's not. Because not that it's not a great company, it is. Not that it's growing very fast, it is. And earnings are growing pretty fast too. But the stock has already taken off. I mean, it was just a year ago, $95, and today it's $187. So you're buying already something that's had a really great run, and you're hoping that it'll continue that run. And it could. I mean, sales are growing 40, 50% a quarter. Profits are only going to grow 9% next year. So at $3.96, almost $4 a share, and an $187 stock, it's really expensive. So I wouldn't chase it. I would not chase it.
Right.
You know, I mean, I wish we would have bought it a year ago, but, you know, I just wouldn't chase it at this point. Appreciate the call, Jay.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. I'm glad you're with me today. We're headed into our last segment. We got, what, 15 minutes left or so? Why not get your question in? You can do it right now. 888-99-CHART. Okay, let's go ahead and go to Bill in Ohio. How you doing, Bill?
I'm pretty good. How you doing?
I'm very good, and thank you for the call.
Yes, I was thinking about taking more of an international position in my brokerage link account. I was looking at two mutual funds. One is VEMAX. It's a Vanguard emerging market fund. And the other one is a VWIGX. It's a Vanguard International Growth. I'm wondering which one you would recommend.
Okay, the difference in those two is the first one is an emerging market fund. And that means it's in the more risky parts of the world. They're looking for emerging markets. The second one you mentioned is not in emerging markets. It could be, but it's more of a more stable kind of fund, international, as opposed to something. So the emerging markets would be more risky. And if you want a little bit more excitement in your life, you buy that one. And both Vanguards, you know, Vanguard is one of the lowest fund families out there. So, you know, you can't really go wrong with on that side of it. But it really is a personal thing for you. If you just want international exposure, you know, and that would give you big companies all over the world, then you go with the second Vanguard fund you mentioned. If you want emerging markets, a bit more risk and maybe a little bit more return, but also it could go down hard too, you take the emerging market one. Okay?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
Appreciate the call, Bill. Thank you. Let's go to Bikem in Fremont. How you doing, Bikem?
Yeah, hi. I have a question regarding Chipotle, symbol CMG.
Yes.
Just wondering if this seems like consolidating and something to consider or just avoid.
Yeah, it does look like they are trying to consolidate. And this is a good lesson, everybody, of a growth stock. Growth stocks do really good when they're growing. And this stock was traded, this Chipotle, the Mexican food restaurant, CMG is the symbol. And They were selling for what, $700 a share when they were growing 20, 30, 40, 50%? Okay, well, all of a sudden they hit a bump in the road and they're not growing nearly as fast, and here they are at 303. And they had those bad news about food poisoning in a couple of their restaurants. All of a sudden they got crushed, and that can happen. That's not infrequent with high growth stocks. Now that it's been crushed, so you look at the fundamentals. It's selling for $303 a share, and it's going to make $10.84 next year. So that tells you that the PE is more like 30-ish. Well, its five-year range is 27 to 30, 331. So it's kind of on the low end of its range. Sales growth are picking up, 28% a quarter ago and 17% growth this most recent quarter. So it is a possibility that this is it's bottomed, but it's still pretty risky, Bicom, because that's still expensive. Their return on equity is only 2%. That's pretty low.
Okay.
But if you're going to take a chance on it because you like it, this is probably the price range that you do it, about 300. Okay?
Okay. Yeah,
appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Now, that's still pricey, everybody, pricey, but at least they have the growth to support it. And let's hope they don't come across another bump on the road like fine food poisoning in another store. If that happens, it's going down hard again. But, you know, you can say that about every store. Remember, this is the one, Chipotle is a Mexican restaurant that McDonald's started, then spun off, in case you didn't remember that. Okay, you know, they're going to open, I don't know how many more. They have 2,200 of them now, these restaurants, but I'm not sure how many more. They're going to continue opening them everywhere. So, okay, you realize that Toys R Us filed bankruptcy today? Yeah, 1,600 stores. And everybody thinks it's all about because of Amazon. Well, that's part of the reason. Amazon is hurting it quite a bit, just like Macy's we talked before. But in this case, and there's a lot of these stores, is because of a LBO that happened in 2005, all the way back then. Leveraged buyout is what that is. What that means is somebody came in and bought them, okay? And it cost $6.6 billion. And they put all that debt on the balance sheet at Toys R Us. So they've been having to pay that off all these years, and they just couldn't. They don't have the horses to pay that. So they filed bankruptcy. Time's up for the hour, everybody. A reminder to visit our recommended books department on InvestTalk.com. This is a personally chosen collection of many of my favorite books. It's right there on InvestTalk.com. Just click on the Investment tab, InvestTalk tab. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein, everybody at the KPP family, thanks for being with us today, and hope you can join us for again on Invest Talk tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.